Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
This is the most bizarre presidential primary I can ever remember. On one side, you have a self-proclaimed socialist and someone under investigation for having top-secret national security emails on an unsecure personal server who's running. And on the other side, you have a billionaire who doesn't need donations from Americans in order to run his campaign for president. Someone as his Planned Parenthood does some good things, is a family friend of Hugh Hefner, has appeared on the front cover of Playboy magazine, has donated to more Democrats than Republicans, has recently donated to a homosexual group that targets school children, and this guy is the Republican frontrunner. After Barack Obama got reelected in 2012, I thought I'd seen it all. But this is even more bizarre, and one must ask the question, how did America reach this point? My guest today is Dr. Janice Shaw Krause. She's an internationally known author, speaker, columnist, and commentator on conservative and Christian issues. She has twice been an official U.S. delegate to the UN and is a former university academic dean, professor, and debate coach. The National Press Club describes Dr. Krause as having, quote, broad, refreshing honesty and intriguing perspective to cultural and political issues, unquote. Thanks, Dr. Krause, for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be with you.
Now, on the 27th of February, you wrote an article entitled, How Did We Get Obama and Trump? And that appeared in The American Thinker. What led you to write that piece, except for the bizarre political climate we live in today?
I was very struck by the fact that twice now we have front runners, and Obama got elected, and it looks like Trump has a very good chance of being elected. Both of them very articulate guys who are apparently have all the answers and are full of empty promises. With Obama, we had somebody who talked about hope and change, and those two words were, you know, very empty. People could fill in whatever they wanted their hopes to be, whatever change they wanted to have, and could feel like this man is going to do what I want him to do. And with Mr. Trump, his slogan is Make America Great Again. And he seems to think that American public can just put on that whatever they think it will take to make America great, mm-hmm. and whatever they think will be great. You know, what does it take to be great?
Right.
So they've provided this empty slate, and people are able to just color that slate in however they want to do it. Both of them mm-hmm. seem to be very, very confident, very self-assured, very strong people who seem to be able to do what they claim they're planning to do.
Right. And there's no doubt that Americans are frustrated. Americans want America to be great again, so Mr. Trump can capitalize on that desire for Americans to become great. Unfortunately, I think that many are blinded. We don't endorse candidates. We can't endorse candidates as 501c3, but we're going to kind of dissect, shall I say, some of what you have in your article and why we as Americans are facing what we're facing. You state in the article, unbelievably, after suffering through the effrontery of the Obama administration's arrogance and its flaunting of executive actions instead of bipartisanship, the nation is now enthralled with Donald Trump's bombastic, flamboyant, but empty promises based solely on his ability to capitalize on the public's anger and to manipulate people's fears rather than specific policy proposals or potential for effective constitutional governance to come in and liberate us from the overwhelming government bureaucrats with their endless thirst for control and restore America's greatness. And they're approaching, in my view, the ones who are most supportive of Trump are the ones who are not asking the tough question, just like you said, like back when President Obama first ran in 2008, hope and change. But they're not willing to ask the tough questions of how Mr. Trump is going to fulfill his promises that he's making out on the campaign trail.
Well, they seem to be picking and choosing their promises, too.
That's true.
It's interesting to see. You know, he's made a lot of claims of things he's going to do that are straight in line with Hillary Clinton, and some of them even with Bernie. So for them to say he'll do what he says he's going to do, I think they better listen closely, which the public did not do with President Obama, who said very plainly that he was going to transform America, and he set about doing it immediately. The thing that really touched America is that Trump is expressing the fears, anger, the frustration, all of the angst that people are feeling with all the politically correctness, with everything that is so strange about culture today, that people are saying, what is this country I'm living in? This is not the America that I grew up in. What is it going to be like if it continues down this trail when my kids are grown? And they're very, very worried about the future. They're very worried financially because the unemployment rates, the debt, the deficit, these are figures that we've just never seen before. The number of people who are on welfare, record number. So to look at all of that, the American public is very scared. And so when somebody comes on the national scene and sounds like they've got all the answers, and certainly Trump appears to be very successful, you know, driving his own plane, saying he's going to, not driving his own plane,
right.
he owns his own plane,
right.
And saying,
really simple, I don't know anyway.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Supposed to be this very successful billionaire. If he can't do it, who can? So the public has bought into this promise that things are going to be, once again, full of optimism, full of potential. Opportunity will be there. Their kids will have a brighter future than they had anticipated just a couple of years ago when they were so discouraged with the future under the Obama administration. So I think it's hope triumphing over reality more than anything else.
I think part of it also has their frustration with the Republican Party and, you know, the promises that we kept being given, you know, give us the House and we'll stop Obama, give us the Senate, we'll stop Obama, and that has happened. I mean, we've got the House and Senate, Republicans have the House and have had it, have both for several years now, and nothing has slowed down, at least the appearances of nothing has slowed down when it comes to Obama's agenda.
Exactly, and all the people who have been elected in 2012, we cleaned House. Gave the Republicans control of the House and the Senate, and immediately they set about compromising with the president, and that's not what they were elected to do. They were elected to go in there and stand for the principles that the public believed when they were running for office,
yeah.
And yet the public feels betrayed. And they don't think that Donald Trump will betray them. But they're not listening carefully. And I think a lot of it comes down to we have watered down education to the point that people don't know how to think carefully through argument. They're not able to discern truth from fiction. They hear what he says and say, whoa, wait a minute, that's different from what he said just a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is the truth here? Or how do I know he's going to do that when he's made these promises over here that he didn't keep? And so the ability to discern, the ability to think through things, the ability to analyze what somebody is actually saying and to respond just emotionally is, I think, characteristic of people who haven't had the kind of education that is demanding that they think.
So much of the argument is centered around emotions and about how people feel. They aren't willing to enter into a true debate. And, you know, you as a, just like you also, you as a former debate coach, how do you grade the debates that have taken place thus far, especially with the Republicans?
Well, they aren't really debates. You know, that's so interesting. It's multiple interviews, and it's so structured that each of the candidates has practiced answers. They know exactly what questions are going to be thrown to them.
Oh, really?
They practice over and over and over again. They call it murder boards. They have three people who very closely mimic the three reporters who are going to be asking questions, and they have the candidates stand there and practice when they're throwing questions at them. So they're not surprised by anything at them, and they're very well schooled in what to say. And of course, these are politicians. They're used to talking. They're used to saying what needs to be said. And the thing that really strikes me about Donald Trump, he is a master at understanding where the public is at and accurately reading the temperament of an audience and responds to them in a way that is just, you can see why he's such a good gambler, why he's such a good businessman. He knows how to do that.
Yeah.
He's incredibly instinctive, and that can be a good strength, but it also, my word, can you imagine having somebody like him going into a meeting with foreign dictators?
I'm trying to imagine that. No, I don't mean it's like a bad dream. I'd rather not consider that. Yeah, I'm trying to envision him across the table from Putin, and I don't see good results.
No, because you've got two men with extreme egos.
Yeah.
Two men who see things in black or white. You're
mm-hmm.
for me or you're against me. It's black or white. It's winners versus losers. And just full of crudities and bad manners and being obnoxious,
yeah.
insulting. That's what Trump has built his life on, being very bombastic,
yeah.
offending people's sensibilities. That's his trademark.
Yeah, and he's been, like you said, he's been very successful using that technique, and not just who he is, but to me, that's not the type of presidential material in the White House.
Disturbing when you look at what's on television now, what people consider good entertainment.
Yeah, that's true.
What people consider good pop music, the misogyny, the crudity, the vulgarity, the obscenity even, is just alarming. Because our young people are just filling their brains and their emotions with this kind of thought. And how can you have something good come from a cesspool like that? And
that's
I'm
true.
Very, very disturbed about it, because I remember a book that William Bennett wrote years ago, Defining Deviancy Down, and we have defined our culture down to such crudities and such awful behavior that, you know, let's take one simple example. People don't dress up for church anymore.
It's true.
You go to church and you see people in shorts, in torn jeans, you see them in sweatpants. It's amazing. We don't have an appropriate appreciation, and that's just a silly example. But even I find it very perplexing to see something like the Academy Awards or some really formal place like that. You will see the women in these ball gowns that are couture and cost thousands of dollars, and the men are in jeans and
I don't watch them so well. Not that I watch the Super Bowl, but the halftime show at Super Bowl.
Oh, my. That's family entertainment.
Supposedly.
It's taking an event that is so very, very public, an event that is broadcast around the world, and having the lowest common denominator. I'm embarrassed to travel internationally. When I go to speak at a family conference in another country, people invariably come up to me afterwards and say, are there other people in the U.S. who think like you do?
Oh, my.
And they don't think so.
Because of the media's done.
Exactly. The
wow.
movies they
That's
see.
Scary.
The television programs they see, the advertising they see, they think that kind of crudity, that kind of swing attitudes are typical of Americans.
You made an article that America is a Christian nation, even though President Obama seems to have forgotten our heritage. And you also note that a significant majority of Americans identify as Christians, but at the same time, church attendance is not keeping up with population increases. And you note that established churches where Orthodox beliefs are captured in doctrinal statements and taught in classes are being replaced by non-denominational churches to focus more on worship than on doctrine, and how that has impacted American voters who identify as Christian, because you note in a poll that 70% of voters and almost 90% of evangelicals expect a presidential candidate to be strongly religious, but in 2012, 42% of the same Protestant Christians voted for Obama.
It's just so perplexing, isn't it? I think the fact that the fastest-growing churches in the country are churches that are not doctrine-based. They are, and I don't mean to be critical here, and I may not say this very well, but they're churches that focus on worship. They're churches that focus on feeling. They're churches that focus on experience, not solid foundation of biblical principles. You don't see Bible studies where expository preaching, people are expected to know the Bible,
yeah.
expected to apply those things in their everyday life and live it out in how they treat other people, how they handle their money, how they interact in professionally
mm-hmm.
in every other way. So,
and also, you know, just look at the marriage issue.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're going to have it. We go to Philadelphia when we have the Gay Pride Parade each June and videotape what's taking place. I've seen too many churches with their floats in that parade. And
exactly.
It blows my mind that maybe letters to the editor from who profess to be pastors of such and such a church who are in support, or unless they've been interviewed in what they've said is in an article in the newspaper, where they support a woman's right to choose an abortion or not, where they support so-called same-sex marriage, because we do not judge, and Jesus never talked about homosexuality, which we know that's not true, when he addressed American issues, specifically in Matthew 19. Americans are just biblically illiterate, and I think what you're hitting the nail on the head when you talk about churches that do not teach doctrine, that they just, that's a low priority anyway, and it's just more playing on the emotions of people.
Exactly, and it has nothing to do with your real life, the way you worship.
And I think that's why so many young people are turning their back on the church, because it is no longer relevant, because the church is not addressing what they are facing on a daily basis. They're not addressing the abortion issue. They're not addressing the homosexual issue. Even creation versus evolution, they're not addressing that. And the kids think, well, you know, what's the relevance here?
Yeah, it's interesting to me to see that so many people who claim to be Christian have absolutely no understanding of what it means in real life.
It's just a name they tack on.
Right, yeah. Exactly. You've got the opposite extreme, where if you're an American, you are a Christian. And so it doesn't mean anything from that perspective either.
Churches need to do a better job articulating what the Bible really says and what it really means to be a Christian, because it's not overseeing in too many cases.
Yeah. Well, we live in a world where the devil is a reality.
Yeah.
And I think in our sophisticated culture, that makes us uncomfortable to say things like that. There are forces of evil.
Yes.
And we have to be aware of those and the influence that they have on us. If you aren't aware, boy, you can be tackled and blindsided.
True. And again, getting back to Scripture and how Scripture talks about the powers of evil, and where Satan walks around like a roaring lion ready to devour you, or seeking to devour you. I mean, that's very much in Scripture. You mentioned a little bit ago about education, about PC education, and where increasingly we see kids bombarded in public school, and unfortunately in some private schools, with this whole PC education, how that has impacted their thoughts on the culture. And too many times the public education system on our levels becomes means by which liberals can use those for social experimentation. So there's that whole thing, and kids are not getting the education that they or their parents are paying for, are not getting the education they expect anyway.
Well, they're not getting education, period.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they're spending so much of their time marinating their brains on alcohol and meaningless sex. We've really substituted fluff. We've substituted nonsense for a core curriculum. We are, I think, paying a very high price for not having good judgment and not developing a discerning temperament among our young people. And I think we have coddled our kids in far too many instances. We've given in to everything they want. They haven't learned that they have to work for what they get. And we've fallen farther and farther behind other countries when it comes to education, when it comes to achievement. We have let our kids skip church, skip Sunday school, and watch TV 3 to 6 hours a day and expect them to be productive adults. It's not going to happen when you do that.
I think the percentage is something like 90% of Christian parents send their kids to public school. But, you know, as I said earlier, the problem is not just the public school. There are also some private schools that are somewhat, if not totally liberal. So, you know, Christian parents who are seeking an alternative can go the homeschool route or be very selective in the private school that they may send their child to. But again, it's the need for parents to be able to say no to their kids, be selective as to any kind of screen time. I think they also need to be aware of what's going on within the church's youth group. Is that church's youth group dealing with the issues that these kids face, or are they just fun and games?
I saw an interesting article, and I did not note where it was from, but I found it just absolutely profound. They studied the kind of youth group church young people came from and whether they remained Christian when they went off to college. And they discovered that the kids who were able to keep their faith in the face of professors who made fun of their faith and denigrated Christian principles. The ones who were able to hold steady came from youth groups that had a very solid foundation of biblical principles.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun and games. And the groups that sometimes just huge groups in churches where, you know, they went shopping on Sunday, roller skating on Sunday, had one activity after another, and wonderful recreation and wonderful entertainment and all that. But the kids didn't get much more than just babysitting.
They don't deal with the issues, yeah.
Adolescent babysitting is what it was.
And if you have the foundation, there's no way that you can withstand the attacks that you'll face in the real world, no matter what age you are, whether you're a youth or an adult. Those attacks are very much out there. So what can we as an ordinary citizen do, talking about presidential primaries, and is there anything beyond just talking to our friends and neighbors and family about what's going on, or is it hopeless?
I think we have to tend our own house first of all.
Okay.
And I think that's tremendously important because far too many young people have never seen a happy marriage.
True.
There's so much that's fake and inauthentic about Christian life up close and personal.
Yeah.
And I think our young people, kids are not stupid.
That's
they
true.
Can see through when you say one thing and you do another,
yeah.
Or when you're pretending and it doesn't really mean anything to you. Kids understand that. And so, number one, I think we have to really tend to our own house. Number two, I think the culture makes a lot of fun of helicopter parents. And I think, you know, you just grit your teeth and say, you can make fun all you want, but I'm going to know who my kids' friends are. I'm going to know where they are,
yeah.
And what they're doing and what kind of influences are going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because I taught at a Christian college, two different ones, as a matter of fact, and I saw there, you know, the kids who want to get in trouble, they glom on to each other. Kids who were sent there because their parents wanted to have good influence on them, they didn't come with the right purposes,
mm-hmm.
You know, they can find plenty of ways to get into trouble and to forsake their faith in a Christian environment just as easily as
yeah.
they can somewhere else. So I think parents need to be aware of who the kids' friends are
mm-hmm.
and to help to guide them. So often I think one of the things that really bugged me when I was in Christian higher education was when parents were getting ready to leave after dropping their freshman student off at school, the administrator would say to them, well, your job of parenting is done.
Oh,
and
kidding.
I don't want to stand up and scream. No, it's not.
No.
It changes. You can't
the world changed, right.
The same kind of parent you were when they were toddlers or teenagers, but you are still a parent.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, both of my children are married now, and we have grandchildren, but we are still parents to them. And there are situations that they face now that we have a lot to say about.
Yeah.
And we're very grateful that they come to us and ask our advice.
Yeah.
And listen when we talk about similar things that we have gone through. So, no, it's not you will do this and you will not do that. But it's shaping and helping them go through the challenges that they face.
Yeah.
And I felt very, very sad for students in college who made decisions that affect the rest of their lives.
Because at that stage, parents need to be even more concerned because of the newfound freedom that their child has. But parents, like you said, they cannot back away. They cannot stop being parents because they're still their children.
Exactly. And they are still going to be making tremendously influential decisions that will affect the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Janice, so much for writing this article. Again, it was February 27th, on American Thinker, and it really was a must-read. It's entitled, How Did We Get Obama and Trump? And again, American Thinker, February 27th, and I encourage our listeners to go check it out and read it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk with you today.
Oh, thanks, and good
bless you.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.